Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 394 of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Crimes of the Future. Well, eagerly anticipated, at least by us, David Cronenberg flick that came out, debuted at Cannes earlier this spring to much fanfare. However, unfortunately, tanked at the box office. And it's kind of a shame, too, because this kind of represents a return to form for him. But, and I mean this in no slight whatsoever, but it's kind of a greatest hits of the kinds of things you got from Cronenberg during the infamous body horror Tax Shelter era. Now, obviously, it comes with some faults, but is so replete and so full of amazing ideas that it's almost impossible to know where to start. It's no wonder you call an operating theater that term, because there is an aspect of theater to medicine, and you often hear surgeons and doctors talking about in glowing terms about a particularly pristine example of an internal organ. And it's something that's writ large in Crimes of the Future, where cheekily David Cronenberg, who also co-wrote this, describes an inner beauty pageant. It's a really fun way of, again, taking the what's inside and all the vexations and tribulations and anxiety about the human body, especially so as we're heading into, I can't even remember, the umpteenth wave of this pandemic, but it's a theme that he's traversed in past films, and it's curious to see how he tackles it with this one again. Now, Viggo Mortensen stars, and he's a performance artist in whose body new evolutionary organs are being generated. And it's such a weird idea. You're watching evolution happen in real time, and you have almost these you have references to Lamarckian evolution, which is what people thought used to happen prior to Darwin and genetic evolution, disabusing people of the notion that, say, stretching your neck would lead to the next generation having a more flexible neck, or that in the case of a giraffe, or that kind of thing. So this is a movie that plays with these kinds of concepts, as you have people saying, and I quote here, "Surgery is the new sex." And this is a very, again, a sterile type of movie, and it's a dystopia that involves the premiumization, or the elevating of surgery to art more than it is now. I mean, it really is. I guess you could almost argue that it is an art as much as a science, almost like an architecture. And for such a futuristic dystopia, the setting is unbelievably ironic, not to mention the fact that this would have been the birthplace of modernity. So this one is lensed in Greece, and everything in the background is so old, despite all these nascent technologies and surgical procedures being so new and cutting edge. And once again, you have Cronenberg examining these kinds of tools, and you have the icky controller, like gaming controller style thing that Viggo Mortensen's character, the wonderfully named Saul Tenser, uses. You have this, it's like Existence with Jennifer Jason Leigh, where she was using this kind of interface between between technology and the human body. It was all kind of gooey, and yet it was like a video game controller that you would recognize for Xbox or whatever, what have you. Saul Tensor, just in the great long lineage of great Cronenbergian names. It works as a wonderful double entendre, as this movie, you could say, is tenser than other ones, right? But also a tensor bandage and something that's holding something together, right? And it's kind of funny because, you know, he's got this sort of Emperor Palpatine hoodie on, and he's sort of skulking around in shadows. And what you have is him and his partner, played by Léa Seydoux, who was wonderful in Midnight in Paris. But they're a performing arts duo who take their talents out to, like, nightclubs, effectively, and perform these kind of invasive bodily openings. And it's pretty amazing when you think of how the human body is treated, and how things that were maybe aesthetically objectionable in the past have come to be more greatly appreciated now. When you think about their rituals associated with tattoos and the demographic associated with them, especially when you cross, like, the equator, then you're supposed to get one as part of some sort of fealty with your fellow seafaring brethren and whatnot. Now it's just commonplace that every mall has a tattoo shop practically, and it's just basically a rite of passage to get yourself all inked up. But previously that wouldn't have been, and that's the most obvious example as something that would have been associated with criminality. But there's all body mod of all kinds that previously would have been considered freakish, that now is easily eased its way into the mainstream. And I'm thinking too, like, a companion piece to this could almost be American Mary, the Soska sisters' film, which I'm quite fond of, despite not really caring for much of their other work. But this one is obviously very ideas-driven, and like other Cronenberg films, I think the major debit, and it's something he's overcome only a couple times, is the lack of real warmth or depth to the characters. And I think that can work in his favor for sterile, sort of antiseptic, dystopian films. So it's not as bad. Like, I was watching something by Mark Kermode, the kind of curmudgeonly UK BBC film critic, who noted that despite all the bells and whistles and excitement of a Quentin Tarantino film, the warmth of character, Jackie Brown accepted, is just not there. So you have a very surface level depiction of characters, and there's no, and that's why I think Tarantino movies never really sit with me as long-lasting, real works of art. They're just pure popcorn movies that are whiz-bang and really exciting, but I never get the sense, in the Robert Forster character, particularly in Jackie Brown, you actually have one of the exceptions where you have this sort of sad-eyed, morose kind of character, but largely they're just very, very, surface level with no depth. And I think that that makes the resulting or the end product kind of, he's hamstrung by that. I think to a certain extent Rob Zombie has that. To a certain extent Cronenberg has that, with a few exceptions. I think one being, again, the other Viggo Mortensen star, which would be A History of Violence, which I thought had a really good characterization of the central two characters, the Maria Bello and Viggo in that one. And that remains the one movie I've seen in the theater back to back, essentially. Like, I saw it, and then 2 months later I went and saw it in the theater again. I never really tend to do that unless there's something of such exceptional quality and value. And in that film there's obviously themes of recidivism, and whether someone can really know someone else, or whether it's possible to change from what it could be at the core of your being. Whether your moral turpitude is something that's malleable, or whether it's fixed. It's something that really has people resonating with the show The Sopranos as well, because you have these really truly ruthless people with dual lives in which they're effectively honorable citizens and good family men. But what's also interesting about Crimes of the Future too is they have this commercial interests that are looking to exploit the husband and wife performance artist duo, and they're trying to get in with them to, this is a character played by the film director Don McKellar, who's quite good as this character named Whippet. Again, the Cronenberg and his names are just fantastic. And he's this kind of librarian type figure, and who's got a younger assistant who's played very capably by Kristen Stewart as again Timlin and Whippet. You can't make this stuff up. It's almost Dickensian in a way, these names. I mean, something right out of it's like something out of the Pickwick Papers or something. Really fantastic. And Timlin, Kristen Stewart, plays this really meek assistant, and they're trying to, I guess, trying to sink their tender hooks into the performance artists to try and exploit them and make a bigger deal out of this this kind of new and this has taken the public by storm, this kind of stuff, and it's a weird idea. I think people had a similar kind of resistance to being on board with the Crash film with James Spader, and the fact that that was kind of an equal fusion of human and tech, and they couldn't really wrap their heads around the fact that someone could want to interface with these two things and do so and have some sort of fetishization of the automobile. Meanwhile, it's a fantastic metaphor, because that's what has happened with cars since they were, pardon the pun, rolled out, and whenever they were. It's been a consistent facet of life that's particularly so with teenagers and makeout points and whatnot. So taking that and maybe making the metaphor a little more extreme is something that a lot of people at the time didn't buy into. And similarly with Crimes of the Future, you had a lot of walkouts. And it's strange because, in the case of Crash, you had Titan, the kind of really ambitious, in large part successful French film that follows in the same, is in the same vein. I was going to say the same vehicle, similar vehicle, no pun intended, to Crash. And other critics have noted the thematic approach taken in both films. I mean, the cast of Crimes of the Future is really fantastic. Again, Kristen Stewart, to whom I've never warmed and never... she's fantastic as Timlin. She has this just really meek, very librarian-esque, demeanor. And in true Cronenberg form, I think in the dialogue, she's described it as pretty in a bureaucratic sort of way. And I thought, man, that is so fantastic. She's got shoulder length, very, very flat hair. You could see how she'd be the cutie at the government bureaucracy, at the local whatever, Department of Agriculture or something. Like, she's very button up and very, very by the book. And the characters are great. There's a Tiana Beatty, who is an indigenous actress, who is one of the love interests of one of the ranchers in Yellowstone, which is a quite a good show, and a Kevin Costner star. And she plays one of these technicians who is highly interested in new developments in broaching the human body, or breaching, I guess you could say. There's this machine called a Sark, which is obviously short for sarcophagus, which is this, it's almost like a fossil combined with technology. So it's really very, very ancient, but also very new. And these are the kinds of things that I love that Cronenberg does. I mean, when you think about Dead Ringers and the tools he comes up with in that, I know I alluded to Existence. First off, it's a game console that's very fleshy. And of course, the new flesh is something explored in the other warm Cronenberg film, which would be Videodrome, or warmer. But you have this really, really amazing and really, really cool piece of technology. It's almost like this catbird seat that Saul Tensor suspends himself in. And this is kind of this weird, sinewy, muscly thing that affixes itself to his corpus, and it just kind of, I don't know what it does to make him generate new types of organs, which are, speaking of tattoos, which I alluded to earlier, there's some sort of way that these organs are tattooed and while they're inside the human body. And there's a great discussion of incorporate and corpus, Latin obviously for the body, and corporeal, and that's its origins there. But again, this Tatiana Beatty character plays one of the technicians. She's terrific. She's got a partner. It almost represents like one of these, I love The Simpsons, a dramaturgical dyad. It's almost like a Rosencrantz and Goldenstern, where they're going around servicing the equipment, and they're wonderful counterpoints. Like, one's super tall, the other's super short, and they just go around, and they have this impeccable comic timing when they go around. And they're, again, mesmerized by the technology. And the juxtaposition of the really old and really, really the bodily aspects of technology, I think is something that will help not making this film date. Because when you have your standard, let's say, 60s sci-fi, and you have this some sort of newfangled machine or something, that it's inevitable that it's going to look cheesy. But with Cronenberg and having, you know, again, sinewy kind of monsters that represent the technology, it's something that is completely otherworldly and is something unique to the worlds that are in of his creation. And so again, I'm not too sure, I'm going to segue into what I've learned here, the extent to which I feel like this is a successful effort. There's some unbelievably impactful scenes. I mean, right off the bat, and it's a spoiler here, but I think filicide, is that the murder of a child, is, you know, as a dad of a toddler, it's very impactful to see that. But you have this scene where you have a young, almost feral child roaming the streets of wherever, Athens. And their organs and their digestive system has been modified, I think, genetically or through an evolutionary, a mutation of some sort. And it's almost, ladders back to the superhero movies and the comic book movies of the 50s. But you have him, and this is really, really impactful. This little kid you see chewing on plastic. And he's apparently developed this, it's almost like a human innovation that enables him to digest plastic. And you have interests who've been behind this as a way of ameliorating, plastics from the atmosphere. And it's a really interesting idea that's brought in later. And again, this movie's full of ideas, but notably you have these dead zones in the ocean. I forget what they're called, but they're these zones of plastic that are miles across, of just accumulations of water bottles and whatnot and stuff that it just ends up at sea. And just seeing this kid gnawing on this plastic, it's just such a visceral reaction. And then seeing him subsequently smothered with a pillow, you just don't know. Like, those are the first two scenes right out of the gate. And you don't know what in hell is going on, and you don't know what to make of this premise. And it can take a little while to really get on board with the fact that what you have is this world that he's created, in which the surgery has been elevated to a kind of game. And it's a tremendous idea, but you have to be on board for it. You have to be in the mood for it. And I'm not sure to the extent people are, because unfortunately this has been a box office bomb, as I said at the outset, and I'm really hoping that people will give it a reconsideration, especially when you have, you just have big box office smashes like the Wakanda movies and the Halloween, obviously, and this one is not accessible even by Cronenberg's own standards. I mean, my God, and it just goes to show, like, the drawing power of stars is just not what it used to be in this new era of cinema. You can't just populate your film with big marquee actors and hope to get anywhere with it. I mean, God love Viggo Mortensen. He's just terrific in everything he does. He's just absolutely just captivating in Eastern Promises, and he's just brilliant here too. And it's almost like some of the other actors can't keep up, and who can't, really? He's one of the top 10 working actors in Hollywood, in my opinion. And some of the debits of this film revolve around some of the people with whom he's supposed to, you know, engage. And sometimes I feel like some of the performances are somewhat of a letdown, but there's just something unique about this beast that's going to require, I think, a revisiting. I've seen every Cronenberg film from the very early efforts to, lensed at the Ontario Science Center and whatnot around here, and to even stuff that's been that's not received approbation like the Cosmopolis movies and whatnot, and the Pattinson films, and I'm still fond of those in their own way. I do like someone who has the ability to take massive artistic risks in the way that Scorsese did with Age of Innocence, and in a way that Tarantino really doesn't do, because all his films are revenge based. But for someone to go swinging and missing with a dangerous method, it's fair to say historical drama is not his forte. Given the fact that he's just even able to traverse these different genres, I think that's just so admirable. And that's what makes him, I mean, such a beloved figure in Canada and a Cannes judge and really important artistically. And there's this rare as the person who can navigate all these kinds of approaches to cinema. And we're so lucky to have him, so I'm going to sort of take this one in. And I think narratively there is a bit of a sag in the middle, and then the whiz-bang finale, and just a brilliant beginning that I think... And he's not alone in that, where you have the second act or third act that isn't quite as impactful as what you have right out of the gate, but there's something really strangely compelling about this one. I got to confess, I'm a much bigger fan of Possessor, his son's recent work, Brandon Cronenberg's excellent body horror. I would give that one about 4.5 stars. This one I'm going to give 3.5. I'm going to have to revisit it and I think be in a different mindset, because I was looking for something a little... After a difficult few weeks at work with just heavy-duty, filing of stories as an extraordinarily busy journalist with so much on my plate, I was kind of leaning towards something on the more mindless early 90s side of things, like a popcorn or revisiting some of the I Know What You Did Last Summer sequels. But I was glad that I dived into this one, because there's just so much meat. There's just, it's so talky, it's so chatty, it's just so just replete with ideas and unique visuals and just a strange, stark, rusty filmic sensibility that must have some sort of deeper resonance as well, or maybe with Rust never sleeping, as the saying goes, and maybe something that the mise-en-scene would have spoken to people's mortality and how the human body is treated in this dystopia. But anyway, check it out and give it a grain of salt and sort of try and get on board. Not the most accessible film that DC's ever done. So anyway, hope you enjoy the show, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.